Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. I think you're going to enjoy a broadcast that we bring to you every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, unless there's a ball game that's preempted us, and then we might be on at 7 p.m. on a Saturday evening or Sunday at 3 p.m. Either way, you can find our programs via the internet. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time at atozen.fm, not preempted by anything. And then we also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So lots of resources for you to share the program and get the information out there. We also link to our guests' websites. So we encourage you to go to their website. You're going to see very little about our guests on our website because the only time that we promote them is on the front page when they're going to be a guest on the program. So our guest is has been on the front page, homepage, if you will, for the last week, as well as being promoted on this radio station. So we encourage you to check out her website. And who is she? Well, she is a returning guest, Kathy Groover, PhD, LMT, and she has a new book out called Body Mind Therapies, and it has to do with working for the body worker, as well as other healing practitioners. And Kathy Groover, thank you so much for joining us. Do I refer to you as doctor now?
No, you can just say Kathy, Richard.
It's good to have you back on the program.
Good to be back. Thanks.
You were on the program the last time you had your first book released.
Yes.
And we talked a lot about that. And of course, our program dealing with new paradigms for a new world and finding those new ways of living has to do with dealing with our health and well-being. And the bottom line is, as the old wise old saying goes, if you have your health, you have everything.
Yes.
If you don't have your health, you've got nothing. And I can attest to that because it was a few scant months ago, back in December of 2012, I finally had the knee surgery, the arthroscopic for the ligament they call the meniscus, and they took away the torn tissue, and that pain was gone immediately.
Yes.
The healing pain was there for a few weeks, and I'm not running, but now I'm walking normally, and I'm just about ready to jump on the bicycle and so forth. But during the time, the 2 years that the pain came and went, I was miserable.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything. So it stands to reason that if we just took care of ourselves, and it doesn't seem like it's all that difficult to do, but your new book is focused more towards the healing practitioner, the people who are, maybe they're into Reiki, maybe they're into acupuncture, acupressure, massage, and the list goes on, of ways in which they can help their, clients,
yes,
customers, patients, whatever phrase they happen to use.
All of that.
All of that, all of the above. How did you come to realize that they needed this?
Well, I started out in massage myself. So I started doing massage about 23 years ago. And as I was working on more and more bodies, I began to realize that, yeah, I can put an elbow where the pain is, or I can try to get rid of that trigger point, or do cross fiber friction, you know, all these really physical modalities. But I started to pay attention to how my clients spoke about themselves, how their self-talk was seeming to affect their health. And I noticed this huge mind-body connection, which is really underutilized in healthcare. And with a lot of the research I'm seeing, I think this is going to be the next phase in our healthcare. I think we're going to talk more about stress and more about mind-body connection. But I saw that in my massage practice, I was able to incorporate some stress reduction techniques or affirmations, visualization, and really make the connection between the mind and the body. And I wrote this book so that other practitioners can take advantage of those things as well. So this is books for anybody, but I wrote this version specifically for health practitioners to help their clients and themselves be healthier.
What would you call, how would you categorize good health? I mean, we can certainly go through the list of a litany of what is bad health. What is good health?
Good health to me is not just the absence of disease. And so many people think of that. I'm healthy because they don't have any, you know, they don't have a diagnostic code in their file at this moment. But we have to look at health as good functioning, you know, and there's not just health, there's mental health and spiritual health, sexual health, financial health. We need to take all those things into account. And we talk about eating organic, and I have a low BMI, and I do my yoga, but are we really talking about the health of our thoughts, our actions, and how that affects our physical being? And I think we forget about that mind-body connection. We need to bring it back. It's very important.
Well, it seems to me that that's an awful lot of what we have been talking about over the last 5, 10, or 15 years is the mind-body connection. It's nothing really new per se, but something I observed shortly after the turn of the year, after the new year into 2013, was that once we'd gotten through all of the craziness with the Mayan calendar and all of that stuff, we kind of seemed to go back to the same old stuff again. You know, in terms of talking with potential guests for this program, mm-hmm. we weren't talking about some alleged cataclysm or some special event or transformation and so forth. Now it's, okay, we're back to the same old business again. We're talking about the same old stuff in a manner of speaking, mm-hmm. People are writing, they're out there doing their thing, they're helping people, They're coaching, they're healing, they're doing their whatever their modality happens to be in terms of contributing to our society, mm-hmm. and so now there is one new date that's out there. I mean, and it's a distance out there, and it's in 2032, supposedly having to do with this new golden age, mm-hmm. I guess a new renaissance of some sort, and it has been said that when the first renaissance came along. I think it was an outgrowth of the Dark Ages. It was like we came out of the Dark Ages into. So are we sort of kind of in a manner of speaking a dark period, a dark age that we're heading to? If we choose to use 2032 mm-hmm. as any kind of a benchmark, do you feel that way that in spite of all of the work that people are doing on themselves, that we're still kind of there?
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up because everybody was, you know, the whole 2012 thing, the December 21st, 2012 thing, that wasn't just a small cult of people.
No.
That was people all over the place. There were documentaries made. There were people building underground shows. I mean, there was tons of stuff. My friends and I joked about, you know, what should we wear for the end of the world? Are we doing sparkles? Are we doing black? It became a fashion statement for us. But people back in Pittsburgh, where I'm from, they were building bunkers. So I'm like, well, that's the difference between East Coast and West Coast. They're going to save their lives. We're dressing for it. But as soon as that passed, you're right. Everyone went, oh, whew, that's over. And they went back to their old ways. And I actually see a lot of that in people's health. They smoke, or they have a bad diet, or they're obese, or whatever it is, and they have a heart attack. And for a brief moment, they make that shift. And then they're like, oh, I feel great now. And they go back to those old ways. The key to health is being able to make changes that are lifestyle changes, not just a temporary, oh, better fix that for the wedding, for the vacation, we want to make these changes to be permanent, and we can make changes on the physical, but we also have to change the mindset with it. Mm-hmm. And you said this has become more mainstream, more popular in the last 10 or 15 years, this whole mind-body thing. It totally has, but the shift that I'm seeing is now it's becoming more mainstream. We're seeing more physicians talk about it. We are seeing more studies being done, and I'm just about to go back to Harvard for my third class on mind-body medicine. Harvard has a mind-body medicine program. Stanford has an integrative medicine program. I mean, we're seeing mainstream universities and researchers go, yeah, we've talked about the placebo effect for decades. Yeah, we've talked about affirmations and, you know, all this fringe medicine. But what we have to realize now is that it's starting to be talked about more, which is the other reason I wrote this book. I think now is the time. People are more open to thinking about their thinking, mm-hmm. whereas before it was this fringe thing, there was this airy-fairy, and, you know, only the tree-hugging hippies did it. Now we're all doing it, I hope.
And that's something that can become rather frustrating when you become aware that your thoughts are creating your reality, mm-hmm. be it health, wealth, relationships, community, etc. And then you start having the same thoughts that you had before you became aware of it. It can become very frustrating because, like, I'm not getting anywhere. I'm aware. And they say that the first and biggest step mm-hmm. to healing is being aware that you're not well.
Right.
Or that you have that issue or whatever the case may be, instead of the in the denial. No, thoughts, that has nothing to do with that. it has to do with my environment or my genetics or he did it or she did it, right. They did it, you know.
And it has to do with all that, too. I mean, I'm in no way saying that people are causing their own illness with their thoughts. And I've read mind-body stress cancer things where these doctors and these practitioners are basically accusing people of causing their own disease.
Yeah,
I think that's horrible, and I would never turn to anybody and say, you did this to yourself.
Yeah.
It's a combination of things. It is environment. It is genetics. It is sometimes just bad luck, what seems like.
Yeah.
But we have to give at least some credence to our thoughts. And, you know, if we're 30, 40, 50 years old and we've had a lifetime of negative thought processes, it's estimated we have about 60,000 thoughts a day and that 50,000 of those are negative. If that's a true statement, that's 80% negative thoughts. How do you break that cycle? It's true. Awareness is good, but we're not even aware we're having those thoughts and that we can be so self-defeating and so self-limiting and we're kind of mean to ourselves. We just need a little kindness and then a little guidance as to how to change those thoughts. And the book tells you how to do that.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. I think this particular direction of thought, if you will, I think is very important for us to discuss. And I think that the process of sort of retraining the mind and the thinking part of us that creates the thoughts that they say that's what created the whole universe. The first was a thought. And so we'll talk a little bit about not so much that specifically, but so we're going to discuss that further. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we are going to continue here on the program with our guest, who is the author of Body Mind Therapies for the Body Workers and Other Health Practitioners, and her name is Kathy Groover. Again, she is also a host of a TV series. We're going to talk about that as well, and we'll be back in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And understanding our own health is, I think it's critical, it's crucial. And we're talking with a guest in studio, Kathy Groover, and she is the author of actually two books now. The one that we're talking about today having to do with body-mind therapies. And what's the title of the first book? Because the business card's got a little small.
It's The Alternative Medicine Cabinet.
And that's a good piece of literature, so to speak, to have by your medicine cabinet, because it's going to give you a lot of the various things. And that's something that I've always been intrigued by. There are certain plants, even where I live, that I've been trying to figure out, and both my wife and I have been trying to figure out if there are any medicinal uses for. There's a plant up there that they refer to as, are you familiar with, I think it's called Sticky Monkey? It's a yellow-orange kind of little flower.
No.
That's what she called it. Maybe it's there's a different name for the plant. Mm-hmm. But then there's also those yellow mustard flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's the, they call it miner's lettuce, which is apparently the 49ers used to eat this lettuce that grew right out of the ground. And we have it growing along Stagecoach Road. And in different places, and even on our property where we live. I don't know if oak leaves are edible or if there are medicinal qualities or the bark thereof and so on and so forth. I mean, these are the kinds of things that people are now looking into because they know very well that, and we've seen the commercials on television, the pharmaceutical industry, for all its good intentions, puts out medications with side effects that you're taking the medication for in the first place, which I found fascinating when I saw this one heart medication. And one of the problems might be heart attack, heart murmurs. And I'm going, but that's why the guy's taking it. So why would I take it? You know, it makes no sense to me. But we're looking for those kinds of remedies. So that's what that book is designed for.
Absolutely.
We're talking about taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And having, if we're a healer, if I happen to be, I haven't been practicing it much, a Reiki master at the third level, whatever that means, you know. I know the general concepts of the energy flow. I know about the meridians. I know about the the chakra points. Mm-hmm. There are more than just seven on the body. Mm-hmm. There's a book called Joy's Way where it goes through. There are points on the elbows, the joints in particular, in the palms of the hand and the feet. They're all over the place.
Right.
And it's like learning all of this stuff, which you probably have, or at least you're aware of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to drive you crazy after a while. I mean, it's great to know it, but are all those even minor little ticky-tacky points, whether they be meridians or the chakra points or what have you, are they really that consequential?
Well, everybody has a different theory on that. And, you know, it's was thought that we have the seven main chakras, and then we have the certain aura, and then this aura, and then it gets bigger, and then there's layers of aura. And, you know, it depends on whose book you read. I think, excuse me, that we have to just be aware that we are energetic beings and anything we can do to help that. And I actually have a whole section in the book about Reiki and different energy techniques, because that is one way to bring the mind and the body together. And I also do Reiki. And it's a beautiful technique. And what I like about it is it heals on all levels of body, mind, and spirit. It's not just a physical modality. And I've worked with a lot of clients who have had emotional distress, and they find that Reiki is something that really, really helps them through the emotional issue they're having, whether they lost a child or they're divorced or they've had a big injury or something. It really helps the emotions heal. And that's something, again, that we don't talk a lot about in this society. We talk about physical healing, but we don't really talk to people about their emotions and how that's affecting their physical body. I think it's something that can't be separated.
That's an area too that a lot of folks have difficulty with, and that being their emotions. Mm-hmm. We've sort of divided the body up into four basic parts: the physical body, the mental, the emotional, and mm-hmm. the spiritual.
Yep.
And I always found it interesting, and maybe we can dive into this because I have a feeling that obviously you're now talking about how, well, they're all connected. They're all interrelated, they're inseparable, and one affects the other. But I always found it interesting that one could actually suffer from poor spiritual health. Mm-hmm. I thought, how would you get a spiritual cold, you know? How would you get an emotional cold? We know how to get a physical cold,
right?
Or the flu or different things. How would you break your leg spiritually? Those, I mean, because I think there are certain phrases like as above, so below, mm-hmm. you know, and that what's happening on the micro at the microcosmic level is happening at the macrocosmic level and all levels down as you go down.
Right.
So can we talk a little bit about that in terms of the relationship to what's going on in our society? And what's going on in us?
Yeah, absolutely. And Carolyn Mace, who she's just one of the queens of mind-body medicine. I'm a huge fan of her work. She talks about that your biography becomes your biology, and how the thoughts that you're having and the stories that you're telling to yourself and to other people become your physiology. And I've seen that time and time again. I don't get sick. Anybody that knows me knows I just don't get sick. And part of the reason is I basically will it not to be. I am very positive. I do affirmations. I mm-hmm. do visualization. And the only times I have gotten really sick have been times that I've had to deal with multiple stressors that I completely have no control over. And I can feel myself getting depleted. I can feel myself getting more and more stressed. And there have been times I've turned to my husband after the third bad thing has happened and I've said, uh-oh. I can feel it coming.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been able to husband my energies and get over that stress. You get one stressor, okay. Three, boom, boom, boom in 1 week, it depletes things.
Right.
There's a really clear connection between stress and our immune system. And it's so funny, we're in flu season right now, and I see all these friends of mine on Facebook writing, I'm not getting sick, I'm not getting sick. And I say, well, why don't you rephrase that and say, I am healthy and well.
Yeah.
My immune system is strong and resilient. And they always respond with a little smiley face, and I don't know if they're mocking me or not. But inevitably, I then see them pass that on to their friend's Facebook page mm-hmm. of making it an affirmation rather than, you know, a denial in the negative. And that's one of the ways I don't get sick. I
affirmation
program
versus
my body.
Declaration. How about that?
Yeah, yeah. But making it positive. You
right,
make
exactly.
It positive and in the present.
Sure.
I've worked with clients with affirmations, and one of the guy came up with, someday I'll not be broke. And I said, oh, no.
I said, not broke.
I said, not someday.
It's the key.
Right, not someday, yeah. And not broke.
Right.
I am prosperous and abundant.
Right.
And if nothing else, and I use this a lot before I go to, if I'm having thoughts keeping me awake, because that's one of the huge issues. People come to me to talk about sleep. It's not a physiological problem. It's their mind won't shut off. So I say, rather than thinking all these crazy thoughts, of repetitive thoughts of beating yourself up over the day or worrying about tomorrow, say something like, I fall asleep quickly and easily. I wake up feeling refreshed. Because that does one of two things. Either it truly programs the body to fall asleep and then you wake up feeling refreshed, which I have found it to do. Mm-hmm. At the very least, it shuts out those negative thoughts, which is basically what counting sheep was about. It distracted you from the negative thoughts and got you to something positive. And that's where affirmations come in. Because the more we reinforce those negative thoughts, to me, the more negative results we're going to have. It's hard to stop thinking things. Thinking that is really hard.
Yeah.
Replace it. That's where the affirmations come in. Really powerful.
So now you say you rarely get sick unless you get like the triple threat, so to speak, the triple stressors. So are you aware of, because you sound like you're doing a lot of different things.
Yes.
So it's not just one of those things that's working. It's the combination of.
Yes.
So you can't. So you're not saying just do affirmations and you're going to stay healthy.
Right.
You do the right kinds of affirmations. It's that plus this plus this plus this.
Yes.
It is that combination.
Yeah. I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to inject myself with HIV and think I can talk myself out of it.
Right.
For example, my husband had the flu. And for four nights in a row, I was up in the middle of the night listening to him cough and wishing he felt better and realizing I'm covered in germs. And rather than that, having a fear of, oh, no, I'm going to get sick or, mm-hmm. oh, I better not get sick, I did my affirmation of I am healthy and well. My immune system is strong and resilient. I visualized my white blood cells activating and going to my throat because mm-hmm. I know the pattern of illness if I get it. It starts in my throat, goes to mm-hmm. my nose, goes to my lungs. It's bronchitis. I know how it goes if it happens. Mm-hmm. I did visualization. And then I took extra vitamins. I took extra vitamin C. I took extra zinc. I made sure I was getting enough sleep. I laid down during the day if I felt I needed to. To me, it's you have to do an all-around approach.
Yeah.
So if people mega dose on vitamin C and then do nothing else, well, throw your thoughts in there too. Even if they account for only 10%, why would we not take that 10% return mm-hmm. on something that has no side effects, that is easy to do, it doesn't cost you a thing, you're in charge of it. To me, it's one of the simplest things we can do, is take that extra step.
It to me is interesting to be able to look at your own health process, your wellness process of your own body, as you have done, as I have done, and know the progression of if I do catch this particular virus, I know this is the cycle.
Yep.
And as soon as I get to this point, I know, okay, I'm now on the mend. And if it starts here, okay, I'm heading into it and I need to take some time. And it was about a year ago that I was working consecutive days. 14, 16, 18, 21 consecutive straight days. Ooh. Even though some of those days were very short days, I was still working.
Yes.
Okay. And it was and I was laid up literally for 3 days. I just was so weak. And it wasn't like the flu per se. It was just, the body was just, it was exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that point that I made the commitment that I was going to have at least one full day off every seven. Minimum of one full day off every mm-hmm. seven. And I've been able to do that because I have a team that I work with to where I have the other person working the Sunday, whatever the project is that needs to be done. At the same time, I am in the process of, you talk about the flu season, working through my wife's illness. Mm. Now, this thing that's going around this year seems to be very debilitating.
Yes.
And lasts for weeks. Even if you're doing all the right things, even if you're taking care of yourself, it still lasts for weeks. And there's a weakness that follows this process mm-hmm. of the respiratory condition. And that's where she is right now. She had a bit of a relapse of sorts where she felt really weak and she stayed home from work. And yet life goes on. And it's frustrating to sit there and listen to her cough and moan and carry on, which I encourage, by the way, moaning.
Sure.
It's a wonderful therapy. I do it when I'm not feeling well. And I encourage people because there's something about that vibration, and your body will tell you which vibration.
Mm.
I'm not going to tell you in the key of C or something of that nature.
Nor would I know the key of C.
Or
so
would
okay.
I know. But don't get a pitch pipe for medical reasons.
Right.
Let your body tell you what that tone is, and then you moan that. And if for some reason it seems to help, if nothing more, it takes your mind off of, even if for a moment or two, the fact that you're not feeling well. And so you kind of get into that state and so forth. It's kind of a nonverbal mantra, if you will. And I think that those are really important. But there are so many different modalities out there that we can use. How do you know which ones to choose?
Well, it depends on what your interests are. Some people are very comfortable going for a massage. They're really uncomfortable going to a chiropractor. Or they're totally okay with going to an acupuncturist, but think herbs are complete hooey. Everyone sort of has their penchant. And then I have people who have tried every single thing ever invented. They're modality hoppers.
Mm-hmm.
They go from one thing to another and wonder why they never get better. Well, you got to stick with something at some point. But also realize that if you try a modality and you don't like it, it might not necessarily be the modality. Sometimes it's the practitioner. Because I do deep tissue trigger point work, lots of medical massage. And I've had people come to my office and say, hey, look, just so you know, I don't like deep tissue. Do not do deep tissue. I don't like it. And I go, okay. So I finish the massage. I say, how are you feeling? They go, oh my God, my pain's gone. That was so great. And I say, that was deep tissue. And they laugh and they go, no, it wasn't. Yeah, we all do things slightly differently.
Yeah.
So if you try acupuncture for something and it doesn't work the first try out, give it a little bit and then try a different practitioner if you really feel like acupuncture is something that you want to do. Everyone does things slightly differently. But there's so much to try and so much to research. The internet is a fabulous resource. Be careful where you're getting your information.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is. There's something for everybody out there.
All right. So you're talking about dealing with the body. How do you, aside from, say, affirmations, how do you work with your clients on that mental and or spiritual area that reinforces what you're doing on the physical level?
Yes. There are some people who come to me and they don't want to talk about what's causing their problem. They don't want to hear about their stress level. They don't want to hear how their thoughts are affecting them. They want to lay there and have me fix it.
Mm.
Okay. It's a small percentage of my clients. Most people truly want to be better and they want to participate in that betterness. So I'll ask them about their stress level. And I'll say, you know, does this illness, ailment, pain, whatever, seem to be exacerbated by stress? And of course, 9 times out of 10, they say yes. And then I say, well, you know, do you want to tell me what's causing your stress? And we might work through it that way. The other thing that I've noticed is we have these phrases in our world, things like a pain in the neck, and I can't stomach this, my heart is breaking, I feel like my hands are full, the weight of the world's on my shoulders. So I look at where their illness is. Maybe they're having chronic shoulder problems. And I might say, well, do you feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders? And oftentimes they say, yeah, you know, my spouse isn't working right now and everything's falling on me. If we can pinpoint the emotion that is participating in that physical ailment, oftentimes we can get fuller healing. That's how I really came to see this body-mind connection in the first place. I had a client who was having hand and wrist pain, and I was working on her every week, and every week she'd leave my office feeling so good. The tingling would be gone, the pain would be gone, and the next week she'd come back and be just as bad. And I started to get so frustrated. I knew she was icing, stretching, she fixed her workstation, she was doing all the right homework, but she wasn't getting lasting effect. And I was getting so frustrated. I was a young practitioner and I thought, what am I doing wrong? And, you know, I was taking undue responsibility for her not getting better. But I asked her this one day. I said, you know, tell me again when this hurts you. I thought I was missing something. She said, well, it hurts when I grab things and when I grip things, like if I'm trying to dry my hair or if I'm trying to lift my wine glass. And I thought, oh, well, that's a tragedy. We've got to make sure you're fixed so you can have your wine. But I listened to the words she said, grab and grasp. And I thought for a moment and I said, well, is there something you're gripping too tightly? Is there something you need to let go? And her eyes opened up and she looked at me and she said, I don't want to let my kids go.
Oh.
And I thought, whoa, I was stunned she had an answer, let alone one that was so profound.
Yeah.
And she then told me the story that when she was a little kid, her brother at 16 had just gotten his driver's license, took out the family car, killed by a drunk driver.
Mm.
And it ripped the family apart. And so now her kids were 16 and 14 and starting to want that flexibility and that freedom. And she was terrified. Mm. She had never told them that story. And I said, you know, I really think you should share that. Mm. So she went home that night and she told her family and they all had a good cry and they looked at pictures and, you know, they had this great moment. I encouraged her to get counseling to talk about it if she was still literally holding on to that.
Yeah.
And she came back the next week and I worked on her and her pain went away for longer.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly she didn't need to see me for 2 weeks. And then it was three and then it was a month and then I never needed to see her again. That's how I want to lose clients.
Mm.
And so from that, I now look at people and when they come to me and they say, I have a pain in my neck, I say, well, who is it? And they laugh because
yeah.
they don't have to think about it. They know exactly
yeah.
who the pain in the neck is.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you can go to your boss, it's typically the boss, and say, you're causing my pain, I need to quit. But if we can acknowledge that emotion and help work with that along with the body, we're going to have fuller healing. I truly believe it.
All right. Well, let me put another spin on this. Do you think that if our social structure, our civilization was functioning differently in a way that was with one of my guests, he likes to use the word life-centered.
Mm-hmm.
I went through an engaged encounter with my first wife, and they defined the word moral as life-giving. I'm using those two terms.
Mm-hmm.
If our civilization and our society and our infrastructure that we deal with on a day-to-day basis was more life-centered and life-giving, do you think that we wouldn't need – because part of me feels as though it's great what you're doing, and we certainly need it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that if we just changed our lifestyle – not only in this country, but around the world, and it doesn't seem like it would take much, we would be doing so much better as a species. You don't see the animals in nature walking around humped over. I've never seen a humped over bear, who wasn't trying to get into a knot in a tree and getting at the honey, and he was just walking around. I mean, you know, you don't see those kinds of things. You don't see them limping around. Unless it's due to an injury, due to a battle or something. I mean, they don't suffer stress and colds and ulcers and headaches as far as we know. It seems like we only the human beings are suffering through this stuff.
Right. Well, that's because we have a different mind than they do. And we have this self-talk and we have a rational mind that works differently than the animals do. And sometimes I think that is a disadvantage. I mean, you know, if a cheetah is chasing an elk and he doesn't get it the first time, he doesn't go back and say, oh man, what a bad day. And well, I was thinking about this girl and the sun was in my eyes and I'm not trying that again. And, you know, I mean, they don't make excuses. They just go
yeah.
get another elk.
Yeah.
And we have this ability to rationalize these things and make excuses. And I also think, I mean, yeah, if we changed our lifestyle and our society, I mean, we'd have so much less illness. You know, we're not taught to really express our emotions. Men especially are just told to stuff them. Big boys don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
You're an hysterical girl. You know, whatever it is. And to me, experiencing those emotions is we have to. It's when we stuff them.
Yeah.
It's the woman that stuffed the fact that she didn't want to let her kids go. And as soon as she started to talk about it openly, the pain started to go away. Now, she still needed the massage. She still needed the ice. You know, I think her acknowledging those emotions would not have just 100% fixed it had she not done the physical along with it. But I think if we can express our emotions in a healthy way and communicate issues we're having and look at more positive things, yeah, I think we'd have a lot less illness. But also we have to remember there's a huge benefit in the society to hanging on to things that are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Look at our reality shows.
Oh.
I think it's the downfall of this society. You know, we're congratulating people for their drug addiction, for their bad behavior, for their prison sentence, for their, you know, we're continuing to pay accolades to celebrities and sports figures who are horrible examples. And it's really a benefit to stay sick, to stay negative. Look how much attention you get.
Yeah.
That becomes your identity. And I really encourage people to not be known by their sciatica or their abused childhood or mm-hmm. their, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. I want to be known for the good things I'm doing and the fabulous parts of my life. Not that, oh, I had migraines when I was in my 20s. It's not important to me. I want to focus on the positive stuff. That's one of the other reasons I don't get sick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't dwell on negative things. Do bad things happen? Absolutely. I don't want to hang on to those.
Yeah.
I want to hang on to the good stuff and move forward with that. And I think that's one of the big problems is we're too rewarded for the bad stuff.
Well, you know that there are hundreds of thousands of millions of people in this country alone who are suffering from a myriad of conditions.
Yes.
Why do you care? I mean, there are so many people out there and you're hitting maybe a tenth of a percent of those people. Do you really think you're making a difference?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons.
Not to be negative here.
No. Yeah. I'm gonna do an affirmation now. Okay. No, but that's honestly one of the reasons why I do this. I mean, I've done 100 radio shows. I've done lectures around the country. This is my second book. I'm working on my third. And I started out by reaching one client at a time in my office. And I would see when they got it. And I would see them come back with less pain. And I'd see them passing that on to, you know, the old commercial of she told someone and they told someone and so on and so on and so on. I saw that happening. And to me, every single person that hears me, hopefully it makes an effect. And they make one little change. And if they tell somebody else and someone feels better, that to me is the point. I started out as a theater person. I was a theater major. I was acting in LA. And I always wondered when I stopped performing, it's like, well, what was that part of my life about? You know, why did I step on stage when I was in fifth grade and be on it for so long and follow that path if it wasn't going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I realized what that was for. It was to help combine the healing and the performing. And now I can do radio shows and I can stand in front of people and convey this stuff in a really fun way, not, you know, a doctor going, blah, 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 blah. You know, mm-hmm. I make it fun and engaging, yeah. And I want people to get it through entertainment. And that's, if I only reach one person today, great. Mm-hmm. I did an awesome job.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you're just joining us, my guest is Kathy Gruver, and she is the author of Body Mind Therapies for the Body Worker, as well as for other health practitioners. And I think it's something worthwhile to pick up and start to use the information that she's made available, as well as the other book about the various remedies that you will actually find around your house, in your yard. I have done a couple of programs on what is called, now the name escapes me, not scavenging, foraging, I think is the word. Mm-hmm. There might even be another word for it, but people actually, and I met a woman in Arizona, in Phoenix, who she either called herself this or was called the weed woman. And it was a title that she took on quite honorably because she began to research the various indigenous plants, primarily of the Southwest, as edible. Mm-hmm. And what spurred her was the fact that she was watching in the 1990s, early 90s, the first Gulf War, she saw this group of this family sitting on the roadside, and they were hungry, and they were kneeling and sitting there in this grassy area. And she recognized some of the plants that were right there and realized that these people are sitting right in front of, or these plants right in front of them were highly nutritious, but they weren't doing anything about it.
Right.
One in particular that I actually tried was tumbleweed.
Oh.
Now, you have to get to the tumbleweed before it dries out.
Yes.
You get to a green growing tumbleweed and you cut off the top 2 inches and you can put that in a pot of boiling water and make a soup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really very very interesting how, you know, you can mix these things with potatoes or other vegetables and so on and so forth, and I don't know what all the nutritional aspects of them are, but you know, it's like, well, as long as you get to them before they dry out, you're in good shape.
Right.
And that's why I was asking you earlier about some of these other plants that are out here on the Central Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are trying to take care of themselves, even if it's just eating nutritionally. Maybe they're not looking for medicinal
right.
purposes. They're looking for food to eat that is – that they don't have to worry about GMO
mm-hmm.
and processing and all of that. They can grow it right there. I mean, I remember a garden that we had in our backyard here
mm-hmm.
up on the hill, and it was great. I remember going to my wife saying she's cooking dinner. She said, would you go out to the garden and pull me a cucumber? So I walked out there, and I pulled one right off the vine,
mm-hmm.
and I took it in. I'm this huge cucumber. And then she said, would you get another one? So I actually found one that was even larger.
Yep.
But there was something about being able to do that,
mm-hmm.
about going out into the garden, picking it, and taking it right into the kitchen and starting preparing it. I mean, you talk about live food.
Yeah.
Now, that's a critical element too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Eating and finding and eating live food as close to cutting it from the plant as you can. And when you get foods that are not grown indigenous to your area, you're not really getting live food.
Right, right. And I think we definitely need to be eating more fruits and vegetables. But even simpler than that is let's just stop eating this processed stuff. If it comes in a highly colored box and you can make it in the microwave in 30 seconds, it's probably not real good for you. And we need to go back to the way our grandparents ate.
Yeah.
We need to go back to real food, not GMO, not processed, not high fructose corn syrup, not MSG, real food, like Michael Pollan talks about. You know, it's so important that we're getting those nutrients. But unless you're growing it in your own backyard and you know the what the soil's like and what the nutrient
right.
levels are, I think we're all deficient, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see all of us taking a real high-quality vitamin and mineral supplement. We need to. Our soils are just depleted. We're not getting enough.
And I've heard it said, if you're going to shop in the grocery store and you're going to try to stay away from processed, they say stay away from the middle of the store.
Yes.
Shop at the ends of the store.
Yep.
Don't shop in the middle.
Right.
And like you say, if it comes in a box, if it's packaged in that respect, you know, I think that the meat and chicken and poultry and so forth, they're along the sides
mm-hmm.
and then so around the edges. It's and it can be very frustrating because buying the packaged stuff is so much easier. It's so much simpler in that sense. But what's that one automotive commercial? You can pay me now or you can pay me later.
Right.
And it might seem like it's more difficult to pay now
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the organic – and that's something else too is, you know, you talk about trying to grow it yourself. And I said this when organics first hit the market back in – I think it was the 90s. I hope I'm wrong, but I just had this sense. You can slap organic on anything you want. Unless somebody's checking, what do they care? What do you care? You know? So I never bought into something being labeled organic as necessarily being better than something that wasn't labeled organic. Because I don't know. Someone made the comment to me the other day. Once the organic farm has gotten its certification, unless somebody comes back to check, they can go off and do whatever they want.
But I think the farmers that made an effort to do organic, they want to keep it that way. They
okay.
didn't do it to get a sticker. They truly believe that's the way it should be.
Okay.
I trust, as much as I can, the organic labels at this point because I really do believe that's the movement that we're heading in
mm-hmm.
and that they're doing a good job.
And the farmers markets are a prime example of that too.
Yes. And these are farmers. I mean, these are a lot of family-owned local farms, people who, to them, it's really important that they're supplying good food to us.
Right.
They're not buying into the big company.
Yeah.
Not even going to say the name.
Whose name will not
we'll call them
remain
Voldemort.
Unnamed?
But he who should not be named. And all the GMO stuff and the you're not allowed to save your own seeds. And, you know, we're starting to see a big backlash against that.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it continues that direction and we can keep fighting.
When you are out and about, just walking around town or wherever it is you're traveling, whether it's at Harvard or Stanford or wherever else you might travel, mm-hmm. wherever your travels might take you, are you aware of the people around you? Can you sort of, I don't know if you're very intuitive in this regard, But do you kind of pick up not on specifics like, oh, this person has this ailment or a cancer or this or that, but can you kind of pick up on the general health and well-being of the population that you're amongst just by kind of being around them? You get a sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'm really good at observing subtle changes. This is something that I've always been really good at. So I could be walking down State Street and someone's in front of me and I can look at how they're walking and go, oh, okay, their right shoulder's high, their left hip's high. It looks like they're having some knee pain. They probably have hip dysplasia.
Mm.
Whoa, okay. And I can do that with my clients too. When they walk in, I can say, oh, your left low back's not doing well today, right? It's not magic. I have a really great ability to notice those subtle changes. But it's the same thing of looking, just there's people have a vibrancy to them. Just like you can look at a litter of puppies and know which one's not doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
The eyes get dull and the fur gets kind of blah. And I mean, I can tell by looking at people, their energy level, if there's some sort of chronic illness happening. There are also really specific physical signs of illness that that people don't know and that doctors don't really look at anymore. I mean, things like thyroid problems and sleep apnea, and, you know, there's a physical manifestation of that that if you don't know to look for it, you wouldn't notice it probably.
Yeah.
I can definitely get a sense of what's happening in the community and with the individuals. It's, I don't know if it's practice or in something innate I have, but yeah, definitely.
And then in turn, in the work that you do, from your perspective, how much of what you are doing is affecting their health as opposed to what they are doing?
That's a really good question. With the bodywork aspect of it, I'm doing a lot. I'm doing a lot to decrease pain, increase range of motion, help things like sciatica, and, you know, people have improved in their sports. Their stress levels from a physical standpoint have gone down. But from the nutrition, mind, body, health consulting stuff, that's really up to them. I'm just a facilitator at that point. I pass on information. And they have to take it from there. You know, I can't show up to everybody's house that bought my book and say, are you having negative thoughts right now? Change those. You know, that would be awesome, I think, a little time consuming. But, you know, it's up to the individual. They have to make the choice. And they have to make the choice to come lay on my table or to change their thought or to choose that organic peach over the bag of Cheetos. You know, it's an individual thing from that perspective.
For people who want to get more information, what is your website?
It is thealternativemedicinecabinet.com.
Which is also the title of your first book?
Correct.
And you say you're working on a third?
Yes. I don't have a title for it yet.
Can you share with us the contents or context?
It is the book you're holding in your hand, Body Mind Therapies.
Mm-hmm.
It is the non-professional version of that.
Ah.
So though this book is fabulous for non-professionals, because I've had many, many people buy that already, including my mother-in-law, who read it cover to cover and highlighted it and put Post-its on it. And she loves, she's so cute. So shout out to mom-in-law. She loved it. And she said, I know it's for professionals, dear, but I got so much out of it. Everybody should read this.
Mm.
So listen to my mother-in-law. but I'm for people who see the word body worker on it and say, oh, but I'm not a professional. I take some of the studies out. There's a lot of studies quoted in here, and a lot of non-professionals like studies mm-hmm. too, because they want to see, well, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And I, you know, take out the references to using it in your practice and instead use it in your life. So it's not going to be horribly different, but it's going to be a little more personalized for people from every walk of life that just want to help themselves heal from that mind-body perspective.
I remember 20, 25 years ago, I was interviewing people and we were talking about chiropractic in particular. Mm. And back then, I mean, it was the woo-woo stuff of the day.
Right.
And the insurance companies did not want to have anything to do with it. Well, I know now that more and more insurance companies will now cover it. And I know people are concerned about this, especially, you know, with healthcare costs in what we call traditional or orthodox medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So what about your practice? Maybe not specifically, but in terms of what you and others like you do, where is the, in general, the insurance industry in terms of supporting preventative health and wellness rather than you know, if it's broke, we'll fix it.
Right. Well, our healthcare system right now is not at all healthcare. It's disease management. It's, you know, they don't even want to talk to you until you're sick, until you have your ICD-9 diagnostic code and you need a prescription. They give a lot of lip service to prevention. There's no money in prevention. and one of the issues with a lot of alternative medicine, and chiropractic is an exception. Acupuncture oftentimes is an exception. I know insurance covers a lot of acupuncture too. They cover psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. But the downside of even things like massage, which you'd think, well, that's pretty regulated. No. Every state has different licensing requirements. Every state has different regulations. There's no one way to show, well, this is massage. You could be going to the spa and having a treatment. You could be coming to my office and getting a treatment. You know, so that's one of the problems with insurance is how is that regulated? I can bill insurance for personal injury and workers' comp. That's pretty much all you can bill insurance for. There are some specific insurances that strike deals with massage therapists, but it pays so little it's not really even worth doing it. I don't know that insurance, especially the way we're going with the nationalized healthcare, I don't know that it's ever going to cover something like mind-body medicine because, well, how do you regulate that? You know, how are you deciding who's a true practitioner and who's doing something weird, but then whose definition of weird are we using? Because I love homeopathics. Some people claim it doesn't do a thing. So who's, you know, which quack is the wrong quack? I don't see that being regulated anytime soon.
And you still have those same criteria, and even within orthodox and traditional medicine.
Right.
You still have those same problems, those same issues people are dealing with.
And I think, I mean, we have to have freedom of healthcare. And I know I met a lot of cancer practitioners who have been basically run out of the U.S. and they have to go down to Mexico to practice because they're curing. Oh my gosh, we're curing things. Get out of the country, which I think is a shame. And if someone who's suffering from a disease wants to try what the establishment is calling a fringe treatment or a non-traditional treatment or whatever they're labeling it as, the person should have the freedom to do that. Mm. But then what about people who really are just trying to take your money? Do we let them stay? I mean, it's such a complicated thing. I had a client say once, there are good quacks and there are bad quacks, and then there are those that fall between the quacks, which I thought was brilliant.
Very nice.
And I said,
very
I guess
nice.
I'm that last one. Who's to decide what works and what doesn't?
Yeah, in conversations I've had regarding healthcare and wellness over the thousands of years that man has been here, and specifically talking about Chinese medicine that's been around for 5,000 years.
Right.
And there is no question. They just know it works. Mm-hmm. There were no studies, double blind or otherwise. There was no FDA. Yeah. There was no regulatory commission to approve or disapprove of this particular practice or that.
Right.
They just know it works.
Right.
And, you know, and I thought, wow, I mean, where would Chinese medicine specifically, where would it be if they had to go through those processes?
Right.
It wouldn't exist.
Right. Well, and even something like aspirin. Okay, we've all taken aspirin. Mm-hmm. They recommend aspirin as a preventative for heart attack and stroke. Aspirin would never be approved today. It would never be approved by the FDA as a drug.
Mm.
We don't know how it works. We know it comes from white willow bark, salicylic acid. We have no clue how aspirin works. It just does something.
Wow.
It would never get approved. It would never get approved today.
Wow.
Aspirin, you know, which we all had.
It is kind of astounding how we've set up these systems to, on the one hand, here, this will help you. And on the other hand, but it has to be fully tested first. And that's something that struck me so strange. Back in 1983, I conducted an interview with a nutritional expert, so-called nutritional expert.
Mm-hmm.
And she came in under on behalf of the product NutraSweet. And she, of course, brought with her a box full of products that she gave me and my wife, my first wife, to try. And in the interview, I asked her, I said, so this has been thoroughly tested and it is perfectly safe. And she, of course, says yes.
Right.
And, of course, my wife and I begin to consume this stuff. And over the course of the weeks, she develops a lot of nausea and headaches. And I had mood swings. So we stopped. We figured the only thing that we've changed is this stuff. So we stopped taking it.
Yep.
And I wanted to do another test to see if this stuff really was the problem. And of course I did. I went back on it and then came back off of it again because it was.
Right.
And then I began to hear interview people. I interviewed a mortician. And I said, so how is your industry, how's it going? And this was in the early 90s. And he says, well, one interesting thing has been happening. He says, over the last 10 years or so, I've been finding that I've been using less and less formaldehyde to embalm or embalming fluid in embalming the people that are brought in because, and it's been scientifically proven, mm-hmm. that aspartame, not attacking any company, but this is the mm-hmm. chemical name for it, turns into formaldehyde in the human body.
Yep.
So those people, and I can taste it. I know when I'm drinking something that has it in it, even if it doesn't say diet on it or what have you,
right.
I look at the ingredients to look for,
yeah.
I look for sugar or corn syrup or whatever it is. And if I see aspartame on it, I put it back on the shelf.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how there are some who are beginning to read the labels, the
yes.
ingredients labels, but a lot of folks, they just, do you find that a lot of people are in a lethargy? It's not a false sense of security or anything. It's just that they've just kind of given up. They're just going through the motions now because it's just gotten so difficult to figure this stuff out. There's just too much information out there. They're overloaded, and it's like, I'm just going to pull the package off of the shelf, and I'm going to open it up, and I'm going to eat the Twinkie, which don't exist anymore.
Yay. No, I don't think it's lethargy. I think that there's a divided thought process here. I think there are people who really want to know what's in their food, and they're reading everything. And I think there's people who, it's not that they don't care. It's just an assumption that, well, it's on the shelf. It's available to me. So clearly it must be safe. And they don't even think about it. And we're really, I know we hear about the bubble in Santa Barbara. We're really in a bubble here in California because mm-hmm. we're so aware of nutrition and diet and exercise and fitness. And I mean, we're aware of that here. For some reason, there's a consciousness for most people, of course, you know, not everybody, of course, that comes with being on this coast. And I talk to people who are from California, who've never left California, who says, well, of course, everyone knows about fill in the blank. Everybody doesn't know about fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually at a large company here in town talking about things to add and subtract for better health. And one of the things I was talking about was GMO. And I had someone say, raise their hand and say, well, what's GMO? And I said, oh, well, that's a good point. It's soy and cotton and corn. And he said, no. What's GMO?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I said, is there anybody here that doesn't know what GMO is? And half the room raised their hand.
Oh, wow.
When I said genetically modified food, they went, oh, okay. They had not heard the term GMO.
Mm.
I thought everyone knew GMO.
Yeah.
But because I'm in this field and I'm in this industry, I now don't know what people don't know.
Yeah.
Because I assume everyone has the same knowledge I do. So it's really hard. We need to be really aware of making sure people are educated. And, you know, a couple years back, we had this whole trans fat thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what is that? Is that the good fat? Is that the bad fat? We're not giving people enough information.
Yeah.
And I think we can't give them too much. Because these things are safe. Can you see the air quotes on the radio? And, you know, they're approved and they're advertised on TV. And don't you know high fructose corn syrup is the same as sugar? Because they're seeing these ads, they go, oh, okay, it's the same. So for people who don't want to think further than that, they're not reading the labels.
Yeah. And this is something that's interesting. I remember seeing that specific commercial and I'm going, wait a minute. One comes from sugarcane. The other comes from corn. And if I remember hearing correctly, the human digestive system, unless you grind it up with your teeth really fine, the human digestive system cannot process corn. I don't know if I'm correct in that information that I heard.
Yeah.
In other words, let's say you were to swallow whole kernels of corn.
Oh, yeah, it comes right back out. In fact, that's the way to mark transit time with your bowel health, which I tell people to do. Well, let's talk about poop. No, it's goes straight to sugar in your body. If you eat, if you eat corn, it's really low glycemic index and it goes to sugar really quick.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the high fructose corn syrup is it's not like they squeeze corn and get juice and call it a sweetener.
Right.
Fine, that would be awesome if that's what it was. But it's a highly chemicalized process.
Yeah.
And because the majority of the corn is genetically modified, you're probably getting genetically modified in your high fructose corn syrup. And I just read a study where the industry itself admitted that about 40% that comes out of a factory is containing mercury. So if that all wasn't enough for you, you know, I mean, It's like there's a whole list of things I think we should be eliminating.
Got to throw out my cornflakes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well,
for other reasons besides that.
Yeah, well, I was just saying there's a whole reason for that.
But sure.
No, we have to be just aware of not only how we feel when we feel good, and then we can explain how we feel when we feel bad, and we need to know what we're putting in our bodies from food perspective and thoughts.
I find it fascinating that people are worried about the others who might contaminate our food supply, others from somewhere else around the world, and there's a name for them. I refuse to give them that name at this point. And yet, in a manner of speaking, maybe not just in a manner, we're doing it to our own food supply.
Yeah.
We are doing it to our own food supply.
Right.
And I and maybe this is a question that that sounds rather inane to some people, but if I had the heads of corporations, be they the food corporations, be they the oil companies or what have you, my question to them, let's say gas prices that keep ratcheting up for whatever the reasons are, or the issue of altering our food supply through GMO and so forth and processing. If you knew, and they probably do, that this was not healthy, both physically as well as mentally and emotionally and spiritually, for your husband or wife, your children, your mother, your father, would you do that to your own relatives? And I have to, I really wonder what the answer would be.
Right.
Would you ratchet the price of gasoline up to $12 a gallon so that your mother, your father, your sisters, your brother, your children who are working now have to spend 90% of their income just to move from point A to point B?
Right.
Or you're contaminating, you know that you're contaminating the food supply. Would you feed that food to the same group of people?
Right.
I really wonder if the answer would be yes or no.
I don't know. I always say follow the money. Make no money from saying don't eat GMO.
Yeah.
I get no money from that. In fact, it's probably my best interest if everyone does, because then they're sicker and I can treat them, you know. But I can't think that way.
No.
We all deserve to make a living,
sure.
And I have to pay attention to the bottom line, too. I have bills. I have rent.
Sure.
I deserve to make a good living.
Sure.
But I can't do it at the expense of the health and the welfare of the people around me and my clients.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to string people along and say, come back every week if I don't think I can help them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sell people supplements because I'm not in the supplement industry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the healing and health and wellness, body work, mind body industry. Could I be making a lot more money than I am? Yeah. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And it's not my MO.
It goes against the grain of your soul, so
yeah.
to speak. It's not your life's purpose.
No.
And you know what that is.
Right.
What is that?
I think I'm here to educate in a fun way. Like I said, you know, combining the acting and the healing, you know, I'm very good at massage. I really am. So I think that's part of it, is putting my hands on people and helping them feel better, but also then communicating things to people in a way that they get it and they can make healthier choices. And yeah. I like to make people laugh too.
Well, and that's a good thing. Well, laughter is a wonderful thing too. I myself enjoy watching cartoons. Now, the ones that I enjoy most are more of the adult versions that you'll see on a Sunday evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into it knowing they're stupid.
Yeah.
I know they're stupid, but I like to laugh, you know. And usually they poke fun at everybody. They don't pick out one
right.
group, and that's all they attack.
Of course.
I love watching. I tell people this all the time, that if I only got my news from The Daily Show,
yes,
that would be just fine with me, because I still get the story.
Right.
I still get the information, but I also get the cute little spin that just shows how silly we are being.
Mm-hmm.
In many areas of our lives, and it makes me laugh.
Right.
And I like that, and it's fun. So before we wrap up the program, again, a reminder of the book, the latest work, and we'll find out more about the third book down the road once it's available. But the book we're talking about today is Body Mind Therapies for the Body Worker and Other Health Practitioners. Kathy Gruver, a PhD, LMT, I finally figured out, licensed massage therapist. What's the PhD for?
I got a PhD in natural health.
Okay.
So
So a doctor in natural health.
Yes.
But you just go by Kathy.
I just go by Kathy.
And so before we wrap up the program, just a few more questions. Who is Kathy Groover?
I'm a silly hip-hoppin' Steeler fan massage therapist.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Very good. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
I want to affect change in people. I want to give people the knowledge that they have the power to take control back of their lives.
Which leads into my last question. How powerful are we?
Oh, we have all the power. Because we can't change the stress. We can change our reaction to the stress. And that's the power. We all have it in us to make those changes.
And the website once again?
TheAlternativeMedicineCabinet.com.
And we will be linked to you and people can go to your website and check out all the good information. I'm sure that you have some type of a newsletter that people can subscribe to.
I do.
That you send out via email.
I do.
And where is your practice located?
I'm on Upper State Street on the corner of State and De La Vina. And oh. They do intersect, yes. Everyone's going, what? They're parallel. No, they meet at some point.
Pull out a map and you'll see where they meet. We turn down it every morning to go down to take my wife to work. So I know exactly where that intersection is. Well, wonderful. Kathy Groover, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it.
I encourage everybody to get in touch with you to see how you can assist them in their better health. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this time, love to law.